That's right. Your ears do not deceive you, despite the rumors that we quit or broke up or, you know, had some other crazy stuff happen. Nah, it's Deep Cover Podcast, man. We still here. And we're coming back to talk about something that an event that we, I think safe to say all three of us really enjoyed, NFL Scouting Combine. You know, we're into the draft, as our listeners know. From over the years, some of the different draft content we put out there. And this is one of those events, you know, that's the one that is turned really into a TV show, essentially, is what the NFL has turned this into. Now, I mean, I can remember watching it years ago. We probably all can, where it was like you were like on the fringe, you know, if you were somebody talking about, oh, I'm watching the scouting combine. Hey, what you doing? Now it's like a prime time event. So, you know, we're going to go back over that, kind of go through all the positions, talk about some people that jumped out to us, caught our eye. Of course, there'll be some names that, you know, maybe, you know, you might hear some names that not quite as familiar with, but, you know, you're always going to get some quality analysis, because I'm joined by two of the best, Chris Aguilera and Kerry Stevenson. It don't get much better, in my opinion. Fellas, what's been going on with y'all?
Very kind words, Mike. Happy as usual to be back talking football with my guys. You know, it's always great to get back into it and get into the swing of things when we get together. It's always refreshing.
Yeah, man. Same thing here. You know, it ain't a lot of things I enjoy more than this right here. You know, just talking ball with you guys, bouncing ideas. You know, if y'all would be privy to like some of the conversations we have before, you know, I learned a lot in that period, and then learn even more once we hit record. So, you know, it's good to be back at it.
We might need to find a way to make that some premium content, right? the chat, we can't get full chat access. Can't have full chat access, but, you know, little glimpses here and there. We might need to find a way to make a little cheese off that. But until that day comes, we're just going to continue to keep doing what we do, and appreciate everybody that's been rocking with us and taps in with us. You know, hope y'all continue to do that, and you know, hope you enjoy it. So let's get right into it with this scouting combine, man. I guess we talked about this before I hit record. We'll start on the offensive side, and you know, anybody who listens to us knows that we're Ravens sort of centric, Ravens sort of focused. So, you know, we're going to start with the quarterbacks, but we know that that's not really something that the Ravens are necessarily in the market for. Certainly not first round quarterback or any, you know, sort of higher round quarterback, but still.
Thank the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, we've been on that ride, right? Where the future was uncertain there for a little bit. So, like you said, thank the Lord that we ain't going through that. But we know that that's always kind of the top story, just in terms of national draft coverage, is always going to be the quarterback. So we figured we touch on them a little bit. So, you know, we'll just kick it around. You know, Chris, I know you mentioned one name. I think we all in agreement on Michael Penix. So, you know, if we just want to kind of kick it off with him and kind of what you saw and your thoughts on him, and then, you know, we just go from there.
Yeah, I thought Penix was the clear best thrower of the football down there at the combine. You know, he came in, measured in really well. From what they say, the medicals were fine, which is the big part of the Michael Penix puzzle, is, you know, two shoulder surgeries, two ACLs. So, you know, it's definitely valid to question that injury history, but for it to come back so fast, and for them to say, you know, like, yeah, everything looks good. You know, that's huge for a guy like that. And hopefully he could find his way into the first round, you know, for him too. You know, obviously, you know, he's a dude that worked really hard, got his ass whooped in when he was at Indiana. He took crazy punishment over there. And, you know, for him to battle back, have the season that he had with Washington, to make it to the national championship game, you know, I'm rooting for him, man, and I hope he can get that first round pick. And but then also as a Ravens fan, I hope he can get that first round pick too, for those selfish reasons.
Yeah, more quarterbacks who go in round one, the better it is. The Ravens fan with them, you know, right now picking at the end of the round at pick 30. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, the more quarterbacks in that first round, the more another good player at a different position could possibly get pushed down to the Ravens. Kerry, what do you think about Penix, man?
I like Penix. I like Penix a lot. And from what I saw with the drills, I know a lot of people have been like harping on and kind of looking at his ability to throw over the middle of the field. And we know how important that is in today's NFL, you know, just the way things are defended. And I thought he showed well. You know, people have a criticism of that. I haven't watched enough of him in depth as far as his tape to really, really say yay or nay on that. But I thought he looked as good as anybody else throwing as far as that, you know, over the middle of the field. And we know the arm talent. I mean, the ball jumps out of his hand. So, you know, we know he has the prerequisite arm strength. You know, I think he's a poised dude. So, you know, again, for selfish reasons, like Chris said, I'm rooting for him. But obviously, as a guy and as a player, I'm rooting for him too. I really, really hope, you know, despite the age concerns and, you know, age and all of that, I hope he gets a real fair shot to lead a franchise.
Yeah, man, that landing spot is so critical at all these positions, but, you know, particularly at quarterback too, because, you know, that can – it can take you down a good path or it can take you down a bad path, you know, depending on where you land in the draft and, you know, who you're working with, what that coaching staff is about, the team, you know, that they have at that particular time. So I'm fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed. I definitely want to see him going round one, but you know, I also want him to go to a good situation. So, because I think that, you know, he's earned that. I think he deserves a real opportunity, like you both have said. I'll stick with you for a minute, Kerry, because I know we talked about JJ McCarthy as another guy who, you know, you kind of wanted to touch on and how, for whatever reason, the streets don't seem to love JJ, but you said you were intrigued by him.
Yeah, very intrigued by him. You know, I was telling you guys before we hit record, like, I don't know how good he actually is, but I see tools there as far as his ability to move, as far as his arm strength. You know, clearly he's tough. Clearly he's interviewed well and he's got a lot of fans. You know, the average fan may not be crazy about him, but these execs sure seem to be crazy about him, because every time you turn around, he's top 12, you know, talked about, you know, trading up to the fifth spot, the seventh spot, to trade up to take this guy. And, you know, there's a lot there to like. Now he's going to have to answer some questions too, as far as his touch with the ball. Like, he's got that fastball, but you don't see necessarily all of the touch throws that you would want to see. But then again, that's kind of unfair too, because, you know, he's in a hardball offense where he's just not asked to do all of these things. So it's not a matter of can he do it or not. It's when he gets the opportunity. So, you know, you can't look at tape and just say, oh, well, because he wasn't asked to do these things, he can't do it. You know, he just has to be put in a position to be asked to do it. But as far as like early on, I feel like he's a guy that early on could come in and contribute to a team. He's shown he can work within the constructs of an offense, keep things on schedule, win inside the hash marks, that kind of thing. And, you know, that's what a lot of teams are asking their quarterbacks to do. So, you know, I don't feel like there's anything that would keep him from being able to do that. And then you see if he can layer on other things. Can he layer on the touch throws? Can he the outside the hash stuff? That kind of upside he shows moving outside of the pocket. You know, he can run, but can he extend plays and make plays downfield? So that's going to be the questions for him. But, you know, it'll be another layer of entry to see. I think right now it seems like he's pretty much locked to go in the first round, but just be interested to see what the situation is for him And then, you know, again, like you said on Penix, you want to see that first round capital because, you know, a guy like that, if it's outside of the first round, I don't know how much of a fair shot he even gets if it's outside of the first round. You know, when people invest that first round capital, you know, there's a little bit more buy-in there. There's a little bit more patience. You know, even if he goes second round, if he gets thrust into action in his rookie year and he struggles, by the next year, they may be ready to draft a first round guy. And then, you know, all of a sudden he's a backup. All of a sudden he's bouncing around the league. So definitely want to see him get that first round capital as well.
Chris, one thing I will say about JJ, going back to him for a second, a lot of these quarterbacks didn't test. I think there was only like a handful of guys that actually ran 40s. I think Keaton Slovis ran, Spencer Rattler ran. Sam Hartman, I remember that because he did like the back-to-back.
Double time.
Because he ain't had nobody else. But you could tell JJ was confident in them damn agility drills because he ran a shuttle and a three cone. Mm-hmm. He had a 4.23 shuttle and a 6.82 three cone. So you knew he came into that thinking, all right, I'm about to do something here. So those are good numbers for him. But I think you see that on tape, right? You see his athleticism. You can tell he's a good athlete. Yeah. But I think you shared some of Kerry's thoughts too about him, right? Like, hey, why are people so negative on this guy?
Yeah, I mean, and it's the same way I feel about Brock Purdy. Like, I don't think Brock Purdy is, you know, he's an elite quarterback, but I don't think he's trash too, the way that, you know, a lot of folks outside of big media want to make it seem. He's a second-year player who was one pick away from being an undrafted free agent. Like, you expecting him to be elite? Like, let's temper expectations. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be the next Tom Brady. He's not going to be the next. I'm not saying he's going to be the next Russell Wilson or Ben Roethlisberger. But you see those guys, when they came in, they weren't asked to be the guy. They were asked to manage the game, don't turn the ball over. And all of those guys did that, and then they built off of that. Like Kerry said, they started adding layers onto their games. And like he said with JJ, I think he's a guy who can do that. You know, he's shown that he's not going – well, he's going to take care of the ball, athletic enough to not, you know, get killed, and just be smart with the ball. I mean, that's what coaches want. Coaches want you to be smart with the football when you're a young QB. I mean, when you're a QB in general, but – young one, especially when you're coming in, they just want you to not mess the game up.
Yeah, I think the three of us, I don't think any of us have a problem with the term game manager. I know it gets a lot of kind of negative connotation. It's probably gotten a little bit better over the years, but I think there's still a little bit of that negative connotation to it. But I think it was on it was either Chris Long or one of the guys he does his Green Light podcast with, they started calling it game CEO. it was a little bit more positive. It's the same thing, right? We're still talking about the same thing because, like you said, Chris, the stuff that you described, that's managing the game. Mm-hmm. That don't turn the ball over, you know, protect the football, you know, get us out of bad plays, stay on schedule, you know, all of those kinds of things. That's managing the game. So I've never really thought about that as a negative thing. You know, when you unpack it and you break it down like that, you're like, okay, well, who wouldn't want that? You know what I'm saying? Now there's that other level that we all know of guys who can take over, you know, a game, yeah, and make plays that change a game. You know, and obviously that's what everybody's looking for at the high end of the quarterback position. But there's nothing wrong with a guy who can do those other things that you talked about and give you a chance to win every time y'all go out there on the field. I mean, that's the name of the game. So
especially a young quarterback, young quarterback, you're not going to ask him to do all of that. Cause like I said, you know, there's guys who are going to be in the Hall of Fame with Russ, Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady. They weren't asked to do that early on. So why are we expecting Brock Purdy to be asked to do that right now? Or a JJ McCarthy, if he comes in, like it takes time. Like not everybody's going to come in and be Cam Newton. You know, like that's the special case. Like that's why Cam Newton was Cam Newton.
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys are unicorns. Mm-hmm. You know, they're that for a reason. So That's something that I guess just in general, I just wish sometimes we had more patience with this stuff. But, you know, particularly like you're saying with young quarterbacks, because, you know, there's so much on their plate. And that transition is going to vary for everybody, depending on the situation that they're coming from in college to where they end up in the NFL. And what, you know, prime example is our guy Bryce from last year, you know, with the Panthers. I mean, I by no stretch of the imagination writing Bryce off after that year, because we've seen too much good to think that, you know, hey, that's it for him. Like what we saw last year is what he's going to be in the NFL. No, there's too much good play and too many traits to do that, in my opinion. But anyway, I digress. Any other quarterbacks y'all want to talk about before we move to a different position?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. I did do one little shout out for my boy Joe Milton, since I've been watching him since, you know, my daughter was born. he's been at it a long time, and you know, we've talked about it when we talk about Joe Milton just in our little chat. You don't exactly know what you're going to get every single time he drives back to throw the ball, but the dude has got an absolute cannon on his arm. And so you look at
it. Did you see in his drills? Because I didn't see any of the drills, but, you know, apparently they said that, you know, he's been trying to work hard on his footwork and his touch. And I mean, from the little bit that I did here, I didn't see any of the drills, but from what I heard, it seems to be some improvement there, which I mean, that obviously would be great for him if he can, you know, tighten some of those things up.
Yeah, I didn't. I saw little snippets of it because I was jumping back and forth between like the main broadcast and the NFL Plus was doing like their little players only broadcast. And sometimes I prefer that one because you get to hear different things from different players, depending on who it is. Unfortunately for the quarterbacks, it's Kurt Warner. So you get everything that comes along with Kurt. Because he was killing is too strong of a word, but I think he was being really hard on these guys because, you know, he's talking about, well, look at the depth of their drops compared to the depths of the routes. This is not what it's supposed to be. You know, this route is breaking at 10 or 15 yards down the field. This guy's only taking 5 steps. That's a 7 step. You know, he's really, and I'm like, look, man, these dudes, young dudes, some of these dudes ain't had to get under center and take a drop. You know, they're working with receivers they don't know. I get all of that. They'll all of that stuff will be worked on when they get to their team and whatever their offense asked them to do. But I gotta think there probably has been some improvement for Joe, because you know these guys work on, they know what the weaknesses are, and they know when they get with agents and other people, trainers, hey, here are the things people are saying, man. Here are the things they're saying you need to work on. They say this or that, or even team scouts, you know, tell them, hey, you know, work on this, work on that. So you know that they're probably working on that and trying to make incremental improvements. I wouldn't be surprised if we go back and watch that we see that with Joe. So I just think that raw talent, there's going to be a QB coach team somewhere who's just like, yeah, I'll bet on that. I'll bet on that. You know, now it's going to have to be a certain situation. I'm not saying, you know, he comes in and he's your starter, by no means. I don't know that's the way you want to go. But if you've got an established guy and you feel like, hey, this is a kid who we could bring in, get him in the pipeline, developing over some time, and then kind of see where we're at, I think that would be a good situation for Joe. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Let's go to wide receiver next, because I think, you know, that's maybe aside from O-line, or maybe they're right there in terms of the quality and the depth of the players at that position. You know, I think both of those positions have a really good mix of high-end quality and depth throughout the group. So we'll go to wide receiver, and I guess I'll go to you, Chris, but I suppose you got to start with Xavier Worthy in the 4-2-1. For me, I would say I maybe like what Brian Thomas did, just in terms of the overall story. Anytime you set a record, I mean, look, I got to give credit. I ain't trying to throw no shade at my man. Got to give credit where credit is due when you break a record. But we'll get to Brian Thomas. I just thought at his size, for him to do what he did, that's impressive. But anyway, that 4-2-1, you knew Xavier Worthy was fast, but you know, anytime you break a record, that's going to get attention.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I He got the 4-2-1, and then, you know, people are gonna go crazy with the Tyreek stuff. Like, he's not Tyreek. All right, let's get that out your head right now. He is not Tyreek. Tyreek has different kind of speed. I don't care what anybody says, that Tyreek's speed is just different. Now, that's not to say, obviously, Xavier Worthy ran a 4-2-1, so he's definitely not a slouch either. But I think he's going to get lumped up with the John Rosses of the world, Darius Hayward Bay, you know, those fast dudes, because he didn't really get a lot of pub coming into this. So for a lot of casual fans, it's like, oh, this guy came out of nowhere. You know, all he is fast. And it's like, nah, that's not all he is. Like, in my opinion, he was the guy who was pretty much like, he was the one who would like get things started for Texas in their offense. Like, anytime they needed to get things going, they went to him. And for as light as he is, that dude has better yak ability than A.D. Mitchell, who's bigger than him, way bigger than him. A.D. Mitchell goes down like he's Hollywood Brown. You know, Xavier Worthy is out there, you know, not just shimmying, but, you know, also able to take on some hits too. He's not Debo, but he's not one of these guys like we saw with Hollywood who just goes down and just tries to preserve their body. He will try to get yards and fight and get those extra yak yards. And I think to just label him as a speed guy only, I think that's a really, really bad mischaracterization of what he brings to a team and what he'll provide for a team, because he can line up on the outside. He can line up on the inside. He can run deep routes. He can run routes over the middle. I just think the John Ross stuff and all of that, and how those fast, you know, those 4-2 guy wide receivers who've come out over the last few years, how they've turned into almost nothing. I think to lump him in with those guys is lazy.
I agree. And I respect his confidence, man. You know you fast when you run a 4-2-5 on your first run and you like, nah, I'm gonna run a second one. You know you're right. Fast, because most dudes who run a 4-2 anything, they shutting it down. Like, I'm done. I ain't got to do nothing. Now, he did shut it down after that second one. He didn't do drills and nothing, which I don't blame him. We talked about it in the chat. His agent must have been, hey, Lay, that's a wrap, Zay. We ain't got to show these people nothing else until your pro day. They done seen it all. But Kerry, let me hit you on Xavier Worthy, and then we'll just toss it around different receivers that caught you guys' eyes. What do you think about that 40, man?
Yeah, I'm glad that Chris pointed that point out, because we were having a conversation about that. It's really just lazy analysis to see that 4-2-1 and then put it up on the screen and talk about all the receivers that have run that in the 4-2s that haven't hit, because Xavier Worthy was already a day two receiver before the combine started. He, you know, his profile is strong. So it's not like he needed a 4-2-1 to be looked at as a potential starter in the league, because that was already on the table. Now he's pushed himself with that 4-2-1 into probably first round lock. But he's a first round lock because he can run a 4-2-1, but he's also a multifaceted, explosive, talented receiver who, like Chris said, look at that receiver core. Look at the weapons there. Brooks at running back, Sanders at tight end, A.D. Mitchell at receiver. But this guy is the catalyst on the team as far as getting them going, you know, extending drives, that kind of stuff. So, you know, people just got to be careful with that stuff, you know, to lump a guy in, especially because of the size thing. Like, I get that. But just to lump this guy in and think he's just this one trick pony is just not the way to look at it. So, I mean, obviously I was watching like everybody else. You see a guy flying like that, you know, it just alarm bells go off. You're like, okay, this is something different. And the first thing I thought of was like, you know how fast toddlers are. Like, when you try to grab something out of their hand, can you imagine trying to grab something out of his hand as a toddler?
He had to be the fastest. Good toddler. Him or Tyreek. Yeah, I guess Tyreek still probably been number one, but you talking about like the fastest toddlers in the world. You know what I'm saying? had to be the fastest toddler.
Because he ain't just started running that fast. Like, you were born with that. Like, you came out of the room, boom, running like that. So, like, yeah, he been fast all his life.
I'd have been in trouble. If my kids can run like that, I'd have been bent over, out of breath. go ahead now. They would have just been getting away with all kind of stuff, because there ain't no way I'm catching them if they can move, you know, like that. All right, let's just toss it around now. I guess, you know, we'll just jump back and forth. Any other receivers that caught your eyes, you know, either one of you guys, where we want to start with? Like I said, I watch more of the defensive players. I've seen bits and pieces of different, you know, positions on offense. So it's not like I didn't see anything, but I certainly didn't see as much as I did with the defense. So, any names that y'all, you know, want to hit, let's toss it around.
Yeah, I wanted, we spoke about Xavier Worthy running a 4-2-1 and folks being lazy, clumping him up. I want to talk about some more lazy analysis people had with Ladd McConkey.
That's my boy.
That dude came out and ran a 4.39. And I was like, damn, like I underestimated him. And I thought he was fast. I thought he was going to run like a 4.43, 4.44. And he came out here and ran a 4.39. So, you know, major props to him for, you know, being able to show off his athleticism. But it's much deeper than just the athleticism. So, but for him to put up that number, it kind of just wipes that clean. Now it's like, all right, this is not Julian Edelman. This is not Wes Welker. It's not that kind of party with this white dude. Like, he's a straight up athlete. And I think he could be a first rounder. You know, when you just look at his, they put that comp up, that athletic profile comp between him and Garrett Wilson. And him and Garrett Wilson, the only thing that separates him and Garrett Wilson physically is just Wilson's arms are like 2 inches longer. And everything else is pretty much identical. So to have that kind of athletic profile and to really blow the doors off the combine and put those, you know, those stereotypes to rest. I was happy for McConkey.
Yeah, let's not get it twisted now. These wide receivers different. McCaffrey, Pearsall, all these dudes ran in the 4.4s.
Oh, yeah.
So you say Ladd hit 4.39, them two dudes hit 4.4. Hey, this is different with these dudes. Mm-hmm. This is different. So them yeah, stereotypes they, that you've been preparing. Hanging on to. Yeah, you're gonna have to come up off them stereotypes you've been hanging on to. Because these dudes can slide. This is different. I know it could be hard. It could be hard for certain people to admit, but this is different. You know what I'm saying? We talked about him because of his background. You know, he ran track in high school stuff. Kind of knew he could run a little bit. And maybe McCaffrey did too. We know that's a track family right there. But Pearsall too, man. I saw his number. I was like, ooh. You know, Ricky was running like that. My bad. I didn't mean to cut you off, Chris, but I'm just saying.
Oh, no, I was done. I was done.
Yeah. These white receivers different. Gary, anybody else? Any name that you want to talk about?
I got two. One, I still got to kind of dive more into them. And I don't necessarily like I'm not putting a stamp on them necessarily yet. But Brian Thomas is a dude that I have some interest in and I want to dig more into, because like he's one of those dudes that like if he gets on top of you, like he running by you. And like that is different. It's one of those things where it's like when you see it, you know, when you see a number at the combine, it's like, oh, I gotta kind of look back because I ain't necessarily see this. And I ain't seeing a whole lot of Brian Thomas. But when I saw what I saw from Brian Thomas, he get on top of you, he leaving you. So there's that. And then I just like, I'm a fan of guys that kind of just get right to it, like off the line. Like, you know, not saying he's necessarily like savvy or this technician or whatever it is, but like I just like the urgency, like just get right to it. Like that's the type of receiver that I'm always be kind of gravitated to. So definitely see some stuff there with him. And then secondly, a dude that Chris has kind of put me on to that I watched some today is Malik Washington. That dude is super Virginia, interesting. Right? Yeah. Virginia slot receiver, just a playmaker, man. He's a playmaker. You know, he's compact, you know, 5'8", but I like compact guys like that in those positions because they're a lot harder to tackle than you think. You know, you think this 5'8", little small, little flimsy guy, you think you're just going to, you know, just go for the kill shot. But, you know, these guys are not only elusive, like contact balance. And you see that with him. And you see that that offense was his offense. It was whatever needed to be done to get the ball in his hands. He knew it. The defense knew it, but they still couldn't do anything about it. So I'm really interested into digging more into him. I think I watched a couple games today, but I want to watch some more to kind of see where he is. Because, you know, we've had this conversation in the group chat, you know, just talking about pairing Lamar up with guys that fit what it is that he does best and fit what we see the trajectory of this offense is going. And, you know, a lot of people, they see Zay Flowers and, you know, they obviously want to naturally incline to let's go find the big body. Let's go find, you know, catch point guy. But no, I mean, do you think the Dolphins, do you think they worry about the catch point guy?
No.
They getting guys that you can get the ball to and they can get it to the paint. Mm-hmm. And like, that's kind of what I want to see, you know, mash up with what it is that Lamar does best and where the game is going. Now, if you got a catch point guy that just, you know, just too good at the other areas of the game, but, you know, don't just give me Keon Coleman. Don't just give me guys that you know you want to, you know, envision in this certain light. And, you know, and I get it. I understand, you know, you want to, like, have the pairing that looks great. But, like, give me the separators. Give me the guys that in situations like we saw with, you know, with that last Kansas City game when teams are going to, you know, play press man and do some of these things. Get me the guys that can uncover quickly. And then get me the guys that once you get the ball in their hands, they can make something happen after the catch. So, you know, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not necessarily worried about, you know, overly worried about size. You know, in the red zone, you stick whoever needs to get out there if you need a little bit more size. But more than anything, get me some chain movers out there. You know, with the way that defenses are playing now, you need that more than you need, you know, just, you know, these 6'5 behemoths, you know, so that's what I'm looking at. So, you know, that's going to be a focus of mine as I dig further into these receivers. But Malik Washington is a dude that's definitely piqued my interest.
Yeah. And on that, it's like that's what Lamar has gelled with so far in his career. He's gelled with the separators. He's not really, you know, an anticipatory thrower like we see with some quarterbacks. And that's fine. You know, like, that's just not his style. He's not going to be the Josh Allen, just throw it up. And, you know, hopefully your receiver comes down with it. That's not really Lamar's style. And that's why I keep going back to the separator thing. I like Keon Coleman.
Yeah.
You know, I like him. And he's along the line. I mean, what is this going to be like? Our fifth draft where we're talking together? Mm-hmm. Fifth or sixth draft?
At least.
And, you know, I got Kelvin Harmon on my resume, a dude who I love so much.
You ain't alone.
But it's, you know, even though you do love those types, you got to realize that that isn't what's like what Lamar has gelled with over the years. And I understand the thought process of wanting to get the basketball team, you know, that is, your wide receiver room should look like a basketball team. But, I mean, like Kerry said, sometimes you don't. You know, sometimes you could just get those fast guys. And it's just I'm not saying, you know, oh, just get Malik Washington and that's it. You know, that's not it. But what you want to do is you want to get those guys who can, if a team is going to play cover zero on you, you can get those guys who can make those boo-boos for the defense. Because if you don't have a guy that can make defenses play and defenses have to be perfect, it's going to be a rough go for them to continue with those cover zero looks. So I'm all on board with those separators.
Yeah, and if we're gonna stick with the basketball analogy, which, you know, disclaimer, y'all know we getting into some dangerous territory because I don't watch like I used to. But if we're gonna stick with the analogy, to me, Lamar, he wants to get out and run, right? He's a five out type of dude. I'm not saying he couldn't play a half court game, because I think that's the thing about Lamar. He can do everything, but his strengths and weaknesses, you know, like anybody, there's certain things that he's stronger at and certain things, or maybe he's a little weaker at. I would say that half court game where it's like, yeah, give me some big guys. Let's run a set offense. Let's throw it down in the post. You know, can he do that? Sure. Right. Can I drop back West Coast offense, three step ball, come out, go to his, but yeah, he can do that. But I would say it's not as strong an area for him as let's get out and run. Let's get five out. Let's just run, you know, and make plays on the run, you know, as we're going. So I think you guys have hit it on the head. You know, you talk about separators, and to me, that's one of the abilities that having separators gives you. It's like, we can go, right? These guys who can create separation right now, quickly create it down the field with speed, however they create it, we can get out and we can run. And I think that's Lamar's really kind of style of play. He wants to run. Because you look, Andrews, Zay, you know, the guys that he's clicked with really, really quickly. You know, even Hollywood. I know sometimes people don't like to throw Hollywood in that group, but I think they had a connection too. You know, these are guys who were able just to create separation in different ways, right? Different ways of doing it, but could create separation, and they could get out and just vibe with Lamar. They just had a vibe, you know. I don't know how you describe it, but like I said, sticking with that basketball analogy, it's like showing up to a pickup game and, you know, you in the game and for whatever reason, there's this dude running point you just vibe with, you know, and you don't know what it is. Y'all might not ever played together before, but for whatever reason, the way y'all play, it just connects. So I'm with you. I'm with you on that. The Brian Thomas thing, going back to him for a second, the reason why I was like,
hold on, Mike, yeah? Quick disclaimer. If you can get a guy that could do both, I'm on board with that. Oh, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, just to make sure everybody knows.
Yeah, like, it ain't gotta be either or. No.
But like you said, I think that's a perfect segue to Brian Thomas.
Yeah, I just was going back to him just because as impressive as 4-2-1 is with Xavier Worthy, and like I said, it's a record for a dude to be 6'2", 209, and run a 4.33, and then have the jump numbers that he did too. You could see on tape that he was athletic, but I didn't know it was going to be like that. So that kind of caught my eye. And, you know, we haven't said this during this, because I guess we've been doing this enough years, and people who listen to us, I feel like they know, but I guess I should throw it in here. The standard combine disclaimer, right? We're talking about athleticism, right? We're talking about movement. Okay. We understand the tape takes precedence. Right. That's priority number one, because it's about playing football at the end of the day. So the tape is always going to take precedence. But right now we're talking about athleticism. OK, not the game. We're talking about athleticism. And that's what the combine highlights in terms of the fan experience. Now, for teams, it's the medicals, it's the interviews, it's that kind of stuff. But for us, and watching, you know, the testing and the on-field drills is to see how these guys look athletically, you know, how they move, you know. So the, I get it. Somebody, you know, there always will be people out there. Well, hey, you know, he didn't look like this on the foot. Okay. Agree. If that's what you like you've talked about with AD Mitchell many times, Chris, if it don't match up with what you see on the field, always stick with the tape. Tape is always going to trump over this kind of stuff. But purpose of this podcast, those who are listening, I should have done this at the beginning. Talking about athleticism. So the Brian Thomas thing, yeah, I was like, okay, he really showed me. I tell you what, though, again, this is another one like trust the tape because this is different too, right? Johnny Wilson surprised the hell out of me, man, because I did not see 4.52. Like, oh boy, 4.52? Good Lord, at 6'6", 230? I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that I see that when I watch the tape. That's what he did out there in the combine, though. So good for Johnny, man. Johnny said, look, y'all ain't moving me to tight end yet. Not yet. Any other wide receiver? I was looking at the RAS site. It's like 18 dudes who had like a 9 relative athletic score or higher. This is a lot of
this receiver class is nuts, man. Like,
it is a lot of athletes, and Washington got 3 of them alone. They got 3 right. At the University of Washington. Like, good night. I think this is about it for me. Like I said, I didn't watch this as closely as I did the defense. I don't know that there was anybody else that really kind of jumped out. We talked about AD Mitchell. Chris had been telling us about Xavier Leggett at least 2 years, I think. So, you know, he did his thing too, athletically.
Yeah, he did.
We know about Rome. We knew Rome was going to show out. And then, you know, Marvin, you know, we'll see. And Neighbors, we'll see. I don't think anybody has any questions about those dudes athletically. So, you know, if they decide to do something at their pro day, even if they don't, I mean, their tape speaks for itself. So I don't know that they would even have to do that if they chose not to do that. But, you know, good for Rome. That's another thing, right? I don't get into that. This, and maybe it's just my being naive, because maybe it really is like this in the NFL when guys don't do certain things. Oh, teams want to see these guys compete. Are you not going to draft Marvin Harrison if he doesn't do anything through this entire process?
Not.
Are you not going to take it? you hope everybody, yeah, let it just happen. Let it go to 30. Let all these other teams just
let it go straight to 30. Yeah.
So, you know what, man, we can't pick this guy because he ain't test. He ain't test for us. We can't pick this dude. So, you know, I don't know, man. I could just be me being naive and not understanding how much teams value it when guys do tests and do all the stuff. But I'm just like, again, it goes back to the tape, because you're drafting them to play football. And if it's all there on the tape, you know, this is like we always say, this is just another data point, you know, verification of certain things, make you go back to the tape, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I saw some of that stuff out there, and it's crazy. Some of the stuff people were saying, well, he's not even at the combine, which wasn't true. He was there, you know, so I don't know. I guess we in that silly season. So I guess that kind of thing happens.
So someone I wanted to talk about real, real quick, mm-hmm. Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah,
really. Because, you know, you take this time, like, because I watched him and I was like, all right, you know, he seems like, you know, a nice player. But now with that, the way he tested, I'm like, all right, I got to go back and watch this dude, because that's what you use the combine for. It's like, all right, let me go back and take another look at this cat to see, you know, if I see something else in the second one, because to run a 4.41. You know, and he's not a little dude, you know, 6'1". And he's a like a tall 6'1". He's not like, you know, you see some guys that are squattier than that. Like he got some like length to him. So I want to see, you know, how much different I come away from watching his tape on a second go around.
And Chris, a 42-inch vert.
Yes.
42. I saw one highlight of him dunking at like a practice or something like that. But 42 and a 10.9 broad, like I remember seeing him last year watching Anthony Richardson. I hadn't looked him up yet. I didn't really know his name. I think I might even share a couple of clips in our chat. I was like, who's the number one? You know, made a couple catches, a couple plays here and there. And I was like, okay, look like might be a little something there. But yeah, I don't know, thinking back to that, because I haven't really gone back this year and like dug deep on him. I don't know that I saw this athletically, but apparently he's got it in him.
Yeah, he might be one of those ones where you have to go back to 2022 to look at, because that Florida offense was rough for this year.
Yeah, apparently he got it in him though. So I saw that 42-inch vert. I was like, oh my.
Yeah, that's not a Richard per se. That's a Ricky. Ricky.
Yeah, that's Ricky. Told you.
That's pretty Ricky what they call him.
Mm-hmm. I told you. These dudes built different. Okay. Stereotypes. These dudes built different. Tight end. Do we want to touch on tight end? Again, you know, Ravens centric. I don't know if any of us spent a whole lot of time watching tight ends because they're pretty loaded at that spot.
Mm-mm. When the tight ends came on, I wanted to get something to eat.
Yeah, Kerry, but you, man, you got anything with the tight ends?
Only thing I got is just a complaint. You know, as a Penn State fan, seeing a Theo Johnson get wasted because, you know, the coach and the inability to find a quarterback, you know, it's super frustrating that you know, in those moments in the combine when you start to see, you know, these skill position players from Penn State just light it up. And, you know, you just know this could have been something different if they were coached and had better quarterback play. So that's what I'll say. Like, Theo Johnson has, like, some real ability. You know, this ain't just a dude that's just showing up at the combine, blowing it out the water, but doesn't have the skills. Like, you know, I'll probably watch some tape at some point. I'm not really pressed on tight ends to, like, really see the ins and outs, but – like, just from watching them on Saturdays, like, there's some ability there. But, you know, these guys get held back. So, you know, Theo Johnson would be a guy to, you know, I'm interested to see where he goes and what kind of shot he gets. But, yeah, outside of that, yeah, tight end is not something I'm really pressed about, other than just trying to keep up with these guys for, like, you know, dynasty fantasy football purposes. But, yeah, tight end is just like Chris said, you know, just whatever else you got to do, you just did it while the tight ends were going for the most part.
Mm-hmm. That Penn State thing, I think about that clip of that lady at the Penn State game who got up in the stand. She was like, I think all Penn State fans feel that way because they think about these guys who come to the combine and blow it up every year, and then they're like, we can't beat Michigan or Ohio State,
right?
What's going on here? The only thing I say, and again, I didn't see it. I'm just looking at the numbers, so it's something that I'm gonna have to go back and check. But I remember Dane mentioning this dude from Illinois, this Tip Ryman cat, 6'4", 271. Oh, yeah. He ran a 4.64, 270, and then had a 4.28 shuttle, 4.26 shuttle, and a 7.02 three cone. So I mean, that's moving for a 270-pound dude. So that's something that just that kind of testing makes me want to go and watch this guy. Like we just said, you know, the Ravens probably aren't necessarily drafting a tight end, certainly not early. Who knows? You know, they maybe get one later or a UDFA, but I see that from a guy that size. I just want to see it regardless of what happens and where he goes. I just want to lay eyes on it and say, what does that look like in the game? So I may go back and check him out. Let's do O-line. Let's get O-line in now, and then we'll say running back for the end of the offensive positions. And we'll just lump it together, you know, guards, tackle, centers. Like for the Ravens purposes, we're probably talking mostly about tackles, maybe a little bit about guards too. But Chris, I know I feel like I have to start with you because you've done a lot of work on these guys this year. And I guess for you, it probably had to feel like it was just confirmation because you were high on a lot of these guys, and then you showed you see the way that they tested and worked out. It probably was like, yeah, that's what I saw on tape.
Yeah, you know, in the article that's on the Deep Cover blog, I think this class has a chance to break records because that's how good I think this class is. And when you look at all the top mocks, you're seeing like 10, 11, 12 sometimes offensive linemen go, whether they're interior or, you know, tackles. And I think the testing pretty much, like you just said, it coincides with what I saw on tape. And, you know, these dudes are super athletic, super big. It's just look at, you know, Joe Alt. You know, Joe Alt is a damn
near 6'9".
He's a power forward. He's a damn powerful. But testing, like you don't see dudes who test the way that he does, that he did at that size. And to weigh in at 321, it's not like he's a slender dude either. Like he's had some mass on him. So it was fun to see. And obviously, you know, the guy who stole the show was Troy Fontenot. He came in and just we don't even have to talk about the testing, which was good, but the on-field drills is where he just went berserk. And you see the movement skills, you see the ability to just move in space, period. And you see that on film. When you see certain offensive linemen go to the second level or they're out in space, they don't know, they look like they don't know what the hell they're doing for the most part. And it's like, it'll be like us trying to catch a chicken. Remember when Rocky couldn't catch a chicken?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
Janoris Jenkins. Well, rabbits. He was chasing rabbits. That's right. Jack Rabbit.
Yeah, that's what Bolden used to do too. down in the muck. You know, Fontenot, you know, when he's in space, like he's a heat-seeking missile, you know, and he's putting paws on you, and he's able to kind of maneuver his body and have that agility and that flexibility to, you know, go down and you know, dig those little corners out who trying to go right up under those offensive tackles. He can dig those guys out and, you know, bury them. So I'm happy that he showed out, because for a while he was, you know, one of my top guys that I was like, oh, I hope he falls to 30, because he can answer, you know, a couple of questions for the Ravens. He could be the left guard if they keep Ronnie. If they keep Ronnie, Ronnie gets hurt, they cut Ronnie, whatever. He could be the left tackle, I believe, because there was talk about he can only play guard, but now all of a sudden everybody sees the testing, and now it's like, yeah, of course he's a left tackle. Now he's been a left tackle. But that was fun while it lasted, but that definitely ain't happened.
I think it was Dane and Nate Tice on their pod. It might have been Tice who said, you know, he used the word watching Fontenot work out that you never would associate with an offensive line, but he said sleek. The way he moved on the field, it was sleek. Yeah. He said you just don't see many guys who can move like that. And I come to you, Kerry. I talked about the wide receivers and the relative athletic scores they had. How many guys who are over 9? There's 11 offensive linemen who are over 9. It could be 12. Jordan Morgan's right at 8.99. So, I mean, he right there on the cusp. That's a lot of dudes, you know, with some really special athleticism in terms of the testing. Any of those guys stand out for you, Kerry, on the offensive line?
I mean, Fontenot, like, to say that, because, you know, when a tackle can really, really move, you know, especially if he has like a tight end background or something like that, you say, you know, it looks like you're looking at a tight end. To say that would be like disingenuous. In those drills, that dude like an off-ball linebacker that has good coverage skills. That's the way he moved to me. Like, it's just crazy how fluid this dude is in space. It's just unreal. So, I mean, that, of course, jumped out to me. But to me, other than that, like, it's really the group as a whole. Like, this O-line class, like, it feels like, you know how, like, the week after Christmas, you go into stores and, like, all the Christmas stuff is marked down. Or, like, in the summertime, the winter clothes are marked down. And that's what this feels like to me. This O-line class is like, damn, I don't need 4 tackles. I don't need to draft 4 tackles, but damn, if I damn it, the prices ain't good right now. Like, that's what it feels like, because it's dudes in this draft, and Chris has pointed this out, you know, on a few different guys that, you know, I haven't had a chance to look at many of them in depth. But then you look at Chris's word and you look at kind of like the profiles that are out there, and then you see little glimpses of them. Like, the holes aren't there. You know, you're saying, okay, can this dude play left tackle? Does he have the arm length? Does he have the athleticism? You know, how much does he project to the next level, as far as like having upside? And these dudes are checking box after box after box. And it's not like we're talking about just the guys that are projected to go top 15. We're getting down to like the end of the first round, and it's dudes in that space that are like, oh, this dude is like a legitimate starter. Oh, this dude has upside. Oh, you can start him at guard, but he can play tackle. You know, he's clean in pass protection. Like, he doesn't have any issues anchoring. Like, I'm just not used to getting this far down in the first round and seeing these dudes that like have like an upward trajectory, like Mims. You know, there's a couple guys like that where it's like Chris said, these guys go back to school. You're talking about top 15 picks the following year that you can get later in the first in this draft. So it's like, it makes you like, damn, like, okay, I want one. I don't need to, but I damn sure want to.
I'd take two. I'd take two and wouldn't have no problem with it.
And then I might get three.
Get three of them.
Like, if I can move around the board a little bit and pick up an extra pick, like, I know I don't need this third dude necessarily, but 2 years down the line, I might need him. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just one of those things, man, that, like, you know, this has been said a lot, but, you know, I can't help but say it again. Like, if you need a tackle, you know, if you need, you know, interior O-line is good. It's not as deep as tackle, but, like, the quality of these dudes in the first, you know, round or so is just – insane. Like, this is like, you're really lucky to be able to you know, get into a class where, like I say, getting into the later first round, early second round, you can find a dude that you can feel excellent about starting day one. So, you know, it's one of those things. Like, I would be really, really, and I don't anticipate this being an issue, because I do think the Ravens will tap into this, but I would be really, really disappointed if they didn't, because, you know, these dudes, it's not just a talent. It's like a complete substance to these guys' profiles that, like, you know, you'd be a fool if you need offensive line not to tap into this at some point.
Yeah, and I think for the tackles, Chris already mentioned it, but for those of you who haven't checked out his write-up on the Deep Cover blog of the offensive tackles, definitely do that, because if you did watch the combine and you saw the testing and you're like, hey, look at these top guys, look how well they tested. Chris talked about all these guys. Every guy that's on his write-up is among one of the top testing guys over this weekend. So you can get even more detail about how they played on the field. You go and check that out. Even the interior guys, you know, I know, Chris, you know, your dude, Cooper Beebe, he was over 9. His RAS was over 9. Haynes was over 9. I mean,
I was happy for him, because I remember I don't even remember what month it was. It might have been like around Thanksgiving, where I was like, damn, because he was my OG1 last year. If he would have came out, I was really high on him. So coming into the 2023 season, I was like, I can't wait to watch my boy go at it. And I saw him play, and I was like, who the hell is this big motherfucker right here? God damn. Because he came in like he was just top heavy, added a lot of mass. Like, it wasn't sloppy weight. You could tell it was weight room weight.
Yeah.
And it didn't fit well with functional strength on the field. And you could tell he was kind of lumbering a little bit, and He wasn't as nimble as he was the season prior. So to see him go to the combine and to be, I think he was like 320 or something, like 322. Yep. Yeah, 322. So for him to be 322 and then also test, you know, as well as he did, I was really happy for him because I think that's a guy. He definitely should. Whoever told him to keep his weight down, they keep that person in his ear. Don't bulk up again because that is not the move. We do not need another Ben Cleveland situation on our hands.
He must have got with Ben Cleveland.
Yeah, so just stay at 322, 330, around that range, and you know, cook, because I think that dude is really, really talented. And for my money, he's the best true guard in this draft. True guard. Because, you know, obviously you got Fontenot, you got Grant Barton, who people want to move inside. But for me, he's the best true guard.
Yeah, so you even interior offensive line, you're going to have, you know, again, maybe not as deep as tackle, but, you know, you're going to have probably in those first two to probably down the third, maybe into the fourth. You might be stretching it by the fourth. But probably those first three rounds, you know, there's going to be some quality guys there. You know, if you're looking for an interior guy, which the Ravens obviously are, don't have a, well, I shouldn't say that. There's guys on the roster, but your starting left guard and starting right guard from last year are no longer or will no longer be on the roster. I can't remember if their contract's already voided or what the deal is, but basically Simpson and Zeitler are going to be out there in the market, and that doesn't mean that they can't come back. But as of right now, you know, they're going to at least out there testing it, kind of seeing, you know, where it goes. So good to know that that's there. And I know they got some, like I said, they've got some guys in the pipeline already on the roster, with Voorhees, with Salah. Who knows what they're going to do with Falalele. They keep him at tackle. Harb's talking about he could play guard. We don't know. Cleveland is there. He's probably on the Ben Powers plan. So, which I like the Ben Powers plan because it works for all parties, right? You've been in the system for a couple of years. You get to that walk year. Obviously, you're probably going to try to put your best performance out there because you're trying to get paid. The Ravens are happy that they're going to get your best performance out of you because they need that. And, you know, both parties are happy. And then you go your way and somebody will pay you $13 million like they paid Ben Powers. And, you know, everybody's happy. So if that were the way, if that's the way it were to work out for Ben Cleveland next year, hey, I'd be okay with that. If he, you know, shows up and shows out. And then, you know, goes out and gets himself a deal, good for him. But we'll see. We got a long way to go before any of those decisions are made. Anybody else on the O-line? Either you guys want to hit or go on the running back?
Yeah, I'll say one more. I mean, we talked about him, but it bears noting, I think this is probably the third year in a row I done brought this up, but to me it's just such an interesting group of guys, an interesting stat that – Josh Norris always brings as far as the short shuttle with offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. And since 2010, 28 offensive linemen have recorded a four, either sub or right at 4.47 short shuttle. Out of those 28 guys, 24 have been drafted, and those 24 guys went to start 84% of the NFL games that they played in. And that's from first round all the way down to seventh round undrafted dudes. So that is a huge cheat code. You know, if you can find a guy that hits that, that threshold. And so for a guy like Mims to, you know, basically look like a superhero and still be able to get that short shuttle time, is super impressive. And you know it just speaks to the talent level of this class.
Definitely sounds like there's some signal in that metric when you talk about 84% of the games. So that's a big number. I'm going to go back and look at that too, because I'm sure there's a couple guys, maybe more than a couple, who got that number or got under it. So I need to go back and look at those guys myself. Okay, nobody else on the O-line we want to hit. We can go on to running back. I again, not
not a position that I watched a lot of during the combine, but I did watch, I don't know, 7 or 8 guys that I got a chance to watch tape on like a couple of weeks ago, because, you know, obviously running back is another position that's kind of in flux for the Ravens to some degree. So, you know, whether that's through the draft, free agency, combination of both, is something that they're going to address. Harbs has talked about it. DaCosta's talked about it. So we know they're going to address it one way or another. Anybody for you, Chris, that kind of stood out?
Yeah, and he didn't blow the doors off the combine, but I thought Blake Corum had a good day. Sure. You see him on the on-field drills, and they did the simulcast with him and Marshawn Lloyd, who ran faster than him. And you see Blake Corum ahead of him like 2 steps in the bag drills. And to me, like that, to me, that means more than a 40 time for a running back. Mm-hmm. Because you see somebody who's processing where their eyes and their feet are just in sync and moving as one. It's not, oh, I got to see this, now I move my feet. It's all simultaneous with Blake Corum, and you see that in his game. And he's a guy, like, I know he's a shorter back, kind of like in that build of a Ray Rice type, but like, to me, he's a guy, he could be a short yardage back, you know, he can like just do a little bit of everything for you. And I know everybody, that, you know, you love the speed and all of that, but it's not like he's a slow poke either. I mean, he ran a 4.53, mm-hmm. you know, so he's no slouch. And elite testing numbers as far as the agility stuff, and
crazy agility
that shows up on tape, and that's what you want. I mean, it's nice to have the dudes who can, you know, make those, you know, big time cuts in open field, like a DeAndre Swift. Like, I'd be like, yeah, that's cool to see, but you're gonna see more of those fumble type plays in the NFL where you have to make a guy miss, you know, in just a small amount of space. And Blake Corum, he's been able to do that, you know, year after year in Michigan. And, you know, we've seen him do it against some of the best defenses in the league. And it seems like the bigger the moment, the more he kind of turns up and elevates his game. And I love players like that who are able to you know, really want to be in that moment and take over a game.
Yeah, before Jim came into the league, I would have said, hey, this match between Corum and the Ravens, hey, that's probably a done deal. But now that Jim is over there with the Chargers, you know, he might get his hands on them. You know, they obviously got that more recent connection. Before, you know, you said, oh, you got the Michigan connection because, you know, the Harbaugh brothers. Well, now you got the dude who just coached you last year in the league. So the connection. And you know, they're probably in the market for a running back over there too, I think, right? Because –
oh yeah,
they're not gonna work it out, I guess. why am I blanking on their running back's name right now?
Austin Eckler,
but yeah, is he already, or they're just talking about he's gonna be a free agent, or is that already?
I think he is a free agent.
Oh yeah, he's already a free agent. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so they're already gonna be looking, and then obviously Harbaugh's got a certain style too that he wants to run over there in the run. And great, you know, my boy is over there, so. Mm-hmm. With G-Ro over there, you already know how they get down. So yeah, they're going to be looking for somebody who can operate in those small spaces, get skinny, mm-hmm. make guys miss in the hole, also run, you know, with some power. And, you know, that doesn't always mean you got to be 240 pounds to run with power. You know what I mean?
I mean, look at Devontae Freeman.
Yeah.
You know, he's a perfect example of that when he was here. Like he had the vision, he just didn't have the juice to really do what he did with the Falcons. But the vision was just like, there would be plays where I was just like, geez, like I wish this dude could just turn back the clock 5 years, because you see the vision. And if he just had the burst, like he would have had so many great runs for the Ravens if he was just younger.
And you can kind of tell with the guys that they've had here, that's one of the things that they must really prioritize his vision, because you talked about him, Ray Rice, JK. When JK was healthy, JK got great vision. Kenneth Dixon, low key, one of my guys who had really good vision and can run in some tight spaces. So I definitely, and there's probably more guys. You know, Gus has good vision. So I think that's probably definitely something they look for in backs. But yeah, that's a good call on Corum. Anybody else you want to hit on, or I'm gonna ask Kerry who he got?
Yeah, just real quick, I want to keep on the theme of crazy white athletes and talk about Dylan Lobby. That dude, if you have not watched him, running back out of New Hampshire, he if you look up his picture, he looks like he's part of the Shanahan coaching tree. He does not look like a young man at all. But I mean, his, you know, similar to Blake Corum, you know, not the biggest guy in the world. You know, same size. I think he ran a 4.54 or something like that. Elite short shuttles, you know, elite with the agility times, which is the same thing that we mentioned with Corum. And, you know, this guy, he's not as physical of a runner as Corum. Corum, is, you know, he could be more of that short yardage guy who can move the chains a bit. But Dylan Lobby, he's a guy that, you know, he runs better routes than most of the wide receivers that are in this draft. Like, if you take his route running skills and you give it to Xavier Leggett is a first rounder, you know, because the way this dude runs routes, and it's not just, you know, those short little angle routes or anything like that. Like, he runs deep patterns too against cornerbacks, and he's able to get open and make plays. Now, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but when obviously the comp is always going to be a Danny Amendola when you talk about a guy who can, you know, give you some juice out of the backfield as a receiver and also run the ball out of the backfield. It's always going to be that Danny Amendola. I mean, not Danny Amendola, Danny Woodhead, sorry. Yeah. Danny Woodhead comp. And I think he's going to be a diamond in the rough for somebody because, like I said, if you can come down and be a third down back and be able to provide that from day one, you already got a leg up on the competition. You know, now it's time for you to progress and you know, add on to your game, similar to what we spoke about with the quarterbacks, you know. And I think this Lobby dude, he's a tremendous runner. And I think just everybody gets wowed by the flash and all of that stuff. But I think at the end of the day, this guy's going to be one of the top running backs in this combine. I mean, in this draft.
He's definitely got the skill set that is in vogue right now in the NFL at the running back position. So if you've got that, like you said, you come into the table with something that could give you a leg up on, you know, any other running back competition that you have going into a camp, you know, because that's kind of where the game is at right now. Kerry, any of these running backs jump out for you?
Yeah, right along the same lines as Chris with Blake Corum, because he was one of the three guys that I kind of lumped together, and it's kind of a microcosm of the position this year to me. I don't see like a Bijan Robinson, you know, a real just stud in this class as far as not having a lot of holes in their game, but then also having an upside to, you know, be a guy that can, you can see rip off a 50-yard run. I don't necessarily see that in this class, but I think there are some real steady guys that are going to get overlooked because they won't pop that long run. Corum is one of them. Out of the list of these three guys, I'll put Corum probably at the top because of that agility, and just Corum is just a dude that I think coaches are going to love, fans are going to love, like once you actually get him in the building and you really see him do his thing, because, you know, he's gonna just get you steady gains. He's going to do everything that's asked of him. And it's not on a, 3 yards in a cloud of dust because he doesn't have the ability to do more. No, he's going to give you strong gains. He may not rip off a 50, but he's going to give you 7, 10, 12. Like, he's that kind of a dude. And body type wise, another couple guys, Marshawn Lloyd from USC, my ears kind of perked up when I heard, I think Daniel Jeremiah say he thought that he could be the first running back taken. So he's a guy that kind of piqued my interest. So when I checked him out, I saw some of those things. Ray Davis is another guy.
That's my guy. You
know, all these guys went to
Big Ray Davis fan. Big Ray Davis fan.
They must have went to the Michael Turner School of Running Backs. These, you know, short, squatty guys, and like Ray Davis, and specifically, I was shocked that this guy wasn't like 225 pounds, because I mean that's what it looks like when you.
It watch looks like him. It. Yeah, you watch him. He's like got that squatty body.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are guys that, you know, they're not going to get a lot of fanfare. They're not going to be, like, super exciting to people. But, you know, these are guys I think you can grab in the middle round, you know, third round or so. And, you know, they're going to get the job done for you. And not just on, you know, 3-4 yards a pop. Like, I think these are guys that can be really, really productive bats that you can get and put in a rotation and have them more so lead the rotation. So those are two guys that definitely caught my eye.
And Ray Davis, man, obviously you can tell, you guys know, cause you know me, when I'm like really in on somebody, I start doing the background. He's got a great story. If you've not seen it, Zach Keither did for The Athletic, did a story on him. But even if you don't have an Athletic sub, you can just Google it and see different articles. I mean, through the foster care system growing up, was homeless at one point, played at 3 different schools. I mean, just guys just got, you know, when they talk about, you know, kids who've been through some adversity, I mean, football got to be easy for Ray at this point. You know what I mean? When you think about the things that he had to deal with growing up, if somebody were to ask him something like, well, you know, what kind of adversity have you had on the football field? It's got to be easy. You know, that work ain't hard compared to, you know, kind of what he had growing up. So definitely encourage you to check out that story. Just a couple guys, some of the guys that I had looked at. Again, this is not necessarily about the combine testing, but I just, you know, watching the tape, who I kind of liked. Tyrone Tracy, who actually did end up tested pretty well, but running back at Purdue, who transferred there. He started out as a wide receiver, so another guy with kind of that background. He was an actual wide receiver before he decided to switch positions, put on a little weight, and play running back. And so when you watch him, you know, he actually looks like a guy who can play the position, right? Sometimes you hear about that, somebody going from wide receiver to running back, and you're like, okay, well, what is this really going to look like? And he showed that he actually can tote that rock when he transferred to Purdue a little bit, and he still got that wide receiving ability. So he's a guy I like. Jalen Wright from Tennessee, all kinds of juice. I mean, anytime you run 4.38, and then you could even see that on tape when you talk about running away from people. He's definitely got some runs where he's getting out ahead of people and ain't nobody catching him. And then Trey Benson, who I think a lot of people are familiar with because of the year Florida State had. You know, kind of test it the way you expected him to, you know, at, you know, good numbers across the board. And man, this is when I started watching these guys, I was like, there's a good little amount of running backs in this group. So, you know, if you're in the need for one, I think there's it's like so many of these positions, but running back is probably definitely one of those ice cream positions, you know, where it's just different flavors for different people. There's a little bit of every flavor in this group. A lot of, you know, some shorter guys, but there's also some taller, bigger guys. You know, you got speed guys, you got guys that are more about quickness than top end speed, guys who can catch the ball. So there's a little bit of everything, I think, if you're looking for a running back this year. Anybody else in the running backs we want to touch on, or we want to move on to defense?
I mean, like we said, the guys, it's kind of hard not to be seduced by these guys that got that juice, like Jalen Wright with Tennessee, Isaac Garrido. I can't wait to watch him. I mean, 4.33. What was it? I know his vertical was crazy, 41.5 inch vert.
Yeah.
And he was somebody that I want to say it might have been Dane that might have pointed him out maybe a couple weeks ago as a guy that he thought was a sleeper that he knew was, you know, freakishly athletic, you know, kind of, he kind of saw this coming as far as him blowing up, you know, the combine, you know, like he did. So I'd be interested to go back and take a look at him and see what you see there, because I mean, you know, I've said about, you know, these, you know, shorter squatty guys that are going to run 4.5 and how there's some usefulness in those guys. And, but hey, there's some usefulness in some guys that can run 4.3 too.
Definitely.
We can always find some use for those guys. You know, they may not be the guys that can, you know, tote it 25 times and, you know, pound it at the goal line, those kind of things, but, you know, look no further than, who was the guy Miami took this year that
A-Chain.
Yeah. I mean, look at the electricity that he created, you know, every time he touched the ball in games. You know, there's room for that too.
Yeah. He's another one of those guys too. You talk about perfect pairs. Like, you just felt like if Miami had an opportunity to get that guy, that was going to be a guy that they would like, because obviously, yeah, thing they do down there is heavily based on speed, and he's a legit burner, and like you said, we saw that. So yeah, Garrido, man, I need to go back and watch him too, because I actually watched a little bit of his teammate Jamar Jordan at Louisville. I didn't watch Garrido, but he transferred, he played this year at Louisville, but he was at Wisconsin. Garrido was, imagine him and Braylon Allen that joint together, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, I'm excited to go back and check that out too, because those numbers are ridiculous. All right, I guess we'll go on to defense now. I think we touched on all the offensive positions, right? I didn't leave nobody out offensively, did I?
No, I think we hit everything.
I think we hit on all the positions.
You reached the end of part one of a two-part episode. You just heard us break down the offensive position group from the scouting combine. And in part two, we're going to talk about the defensive position group. So come on back and check that out.